Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. Jace here, along with Manny and Jaden. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Witchblade, Days of the Outlaws, number one. It's a one-shot from 2013 with the Witchblade in the Old West. Very enjoyable issue. So for those of you not familiar with our podcast, we are reading every Top Cow Artifact Universe book in order and discussing them and analyzing them. And that's not publication order, that's actually a reading order that was put together by a user that goes by the name of Condor on the Comic Vine website. So the first issues take place way back in ancient Egypt, and they move forward through time. If you want to take a look at that chronology, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, go to the Top Cow Chronology page, look for the Comic Vine logo, click on that, and you can catch up pretty quickly. As far as this issue goes, Manny, why don't you give us the creator rundown?
All right, we have the cover date, April 2013. Written by Joshua Hale Fialkov, penciled and inked by Nelson Blake II, and colored by Dave McCaig.
Yeah, and I want to say that this issue, as I said, pretty recent, 2013, was the publication date. What was the month on that, Manny?
It was April 2013.
So I couldn't find a trade paperback that it's collected in, but it is available on Comixology digitally for $1.99. I also looked earlier today and saw several copies on eBay for as low as $1.50. So probably pretty easy to track down this issue, and I would say it's definitely worth reading. So what were your initial thoughts, Jaden?
The art is definitely something that I don't think we would see in an older book. This is definitely more of like a 2010-ish era type art. And I think it's actually pretty good. It's got really, really good lines, and it's really clean. And the story, for the most part, I think was really good. But it's one of those books that it reminds me a lot of the New 52 Justice League when it first started. It has a lot of good, and I like the art, but it's just, there's not much like dialogue. It only took a little bit to read. It's a very quick comic to go through.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Definitely much more of a modern book than a lot of the books we've been reading, in as much as I finished it and it felt like I'd only been reading for 5 minutes, and I was like, what, that's it? And, you know, realized that I had actually read a full 20-page story, because there is so little dialogue, it really doesn't take that much to go through it. That being said, the story is well told. The storytelling from panel to panel is very well done. I feel like I hadn't seen anything from this artist before, Nelson Blake II, but I feel like his strength, if not in the storytelling from panel to panel and just the progression of getting the story out with minimal exposition or dialogue, the strength of his art lies in his facial expressions. Very well done. Especially in the priest. Seems like he uses the priest to really move the story along several times just by the facial expression on the priest's face. So, I don't know how you guys feel about that. What do you think overall, Manny?
I thought it was kind of refreshing to finally get an issue where, you know, we have our character, you know, obviously she's been wielding the Witchblade for quite a while, because we see her, you know, really, really confident with it, and also she uses it with such ease. She's not fumbling or anything. I mean, she goes as far as creating a teepee with it to protect her and the priest when they're out in the wilderness, in the woods. And it was just a nice different take to what, you know, we usually get, the kind of the symbiote look that's, you know, kind of all over the place. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the artwork. I will say the same thing as you guys, that it did feel really quick, but nonetheless, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, let me give a quick synopsis. So, Colorado Hills, Colorado, 1878, winter. We see the scene set at the sheriff's office or building in this town. And one thing I thought was kind of strange. So the sheriff's actually taking a bath right in the sheriff's office, and with wanted posters on the wall and everything. And maybe the door was locked. I mean, it does say crash, and then she turns and it's knock, knock, sheriff. You know, I've come to make a call. Come to get what's mine, he says. And the woman sheriff reaches for her gun, just hanging on the chair next to the bathtub. But this person that came in, crashed in the door, takes a shot at the chair and keeps her from grabbing her gun. And he says, now, I was going to just take back the money you stole from me. And she says, no, Amos, you stole that money. And he says you. But anyway, he was just going to take the money, but he sees something more that he likes. And she tells him to just turn around and leave the jail now. And starts to advance on her. The woman sheriff immediately springs out of the tub, and by the time she lands on the floor, she's clothed in the Witchblade armor, knocks him against the wall, and warns him about ever putting his hands on a woman again. As she's threatening him with the Witchblade, the door opens. Apparently it's the priest from the town, heard the noise, came to investigate, sees that the sheriff is clothed in the Witchblade armor, takes off running, yelling that the sheriff is a witch. We see early on in the first few pages that the sheriff is at least in part Native American. We can tell that by the feathers and braids in her hair. So she's very upset that the priest saw her in her Witchblade armor. She tells Amos not to move. She goes to deal with the town folk. We see that there's quite a crowd that has gathered, and the priest is kind of stirring them up into a panic. And a few of them say, engine magic, I knew it. And she tells the crowd as she approaches them, there's no such thing as engine magic. The crowd says, are you calling Father McClellan a liar? And she says, yeah, I am. Then Amos emerges from the sheriff's office, says it's all true. She tried to seduce me. When I wouldn't lie with that half-engine, she turned into a demon. And Kono is her name. She says, for 3 years I've defended this town from bandits and thieves, taking care of each of you like you're my own. Are you going to let panic and hate erase all that? Or can you be the decent people I know you are? The next scene, we see they're still casting disparaging remarks down upon her, and she's packing up to leave. The mayor says that she's going to have to leave the horse because it's part of the job. She says, well, you can bill me, and she rides off into the snow, still upset about what happened. Next scene, we see the father is tending to a boy that's sick. He hears a noise from outside. He goes to investigate, and we see Ramon Estacado and his three cronies that appeared on the last page of The Darkness 89 that we just covered in last episode. So this book picks up right where that left off. And the priest tells him he doesn't want any trouble. Estacado replies, Father, please, we simply want to pillage your village until spring. Bring out your women or we burn the town to the ground. So the priest takes off running, and the priest is found apparently freezing in the snow, passed out by Kono. She takes him into a teepee made actually out of the Witchblade and says, did they accuse you of witchcraft and leave you to die too? The priest says, no, I'm sorry. I've seen the devil. You're not him. She says, what does that mean? And he tells her about Estacado and his band of marauders coming to accost the town. So, of course, regardless of them kicking her out, she takes it upon herself to go and save them. So she heads into town and confronts Estacado and his cronies with Kono emerging on top. Estacado says, you actually hurt me. Nobody's ever been able to do that before. Kono says that she's had a bad day, but she's not in the killing mood, so she gives him the chance to just leave. 30 seconds to run. Estacado turns to his cronies and says, "Boys, pack it in." Kona says, "I didn't say anything about your boys, just you. Go now." And he leaves. Then she tells the rest of the cronies that she's seen their true faces. Hatred seethes in your hearts and evil lurks just below the surface. That's her own fault. Should have known better than to trust a white man. And chooses to leave the town. Tells the three remaining members of Estacado's band that they should enjoy their time there, but be careful because the local bunch are a bunch of jerks. And she leaves, and that's it. So as I said, a fairly short story, but there were a lot of really cool things that happened. The art done extremely well, as we discussed, the storytelling from panel to panel was done really well. Why don't you tell us a few of the cool tidbits that you saw in there, Jaden, that you really liked?
Well, kind of building on what Manny said before, how she is kind of more comfortable with the Witchblade, I feel like that's also partially the artist, because it's not like the any of this is really that scripted. Like, she makes a gun out of the Witchblade, which is pretty cool, and how she makes the teepee. But also with Ramon, he has this bandana on his face that's not like a real bandana. It's this figment of like shade that he makes that has a what looks like a demon mouth on it.
Yeah, manifestation of the darkness.
Yeah, which is actually pretty cool. I think it's a different take on it.
Yeah, I mean, he's an outlaw. You're used to seeing outlaws with a bandana on. He just chooses to make his bandana out of the darkness with these giant teeth on it,
which I think is a very cool,
very thing menacing
that the artist decided to do. The story's pretty straightforward. I like that. I think it's interesting that they have a female sheriff in the Old West, because I think that would probably be quite rare to find back.
Quite then. A stretch. Not only a female sheriff, a half Indian female sheriff.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's very believable, but I mean, you couldn't probably pick anybody better than her to be the sheriff, considering she has the Witchblade.
Yeah. What about you, Manny? Any little tidbits that stood out?
Well, you know, it's like we've already talked about, there's not necessarily too much to read, but there's just a lot to look at. I mean, there's a lot of detail in the artwork that maybe wasn't even that necessary on the villagers in the back. I noticed a few of them have some fine detail on their necks and on their garments, what they're wearing. And I just thought I thought it was also really cool how she was able to manifest a gun out of the Witchblade. And it didn't take me too long to read, but I took a little bit longer to really appreciate some of the details. Also, when Ramon comes into town, I like the detail on the looks of the horses, the eyes, giving a little bit of a meaner look. I thought they looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I would echo what Jaden said. For me, the bandana on Ramon, really cool. Being able to make an actual pistol out of the Witchblade is just cool. You'd like never run out of ammo. The chair that Ramon makes for himself, kind of the throne he has, town has a lot of detail. It looks, you know, with those little jewels or glowing pods on there, it looks almost Witchblade-like in and of itself. So it makes me curious about what the actual powers of the darkness are, what it can actually create. And then, yeah, just detail in the faces. If you look on page 14 at the top there, that's a great panel with some choice words from Kono when she decides that she's going to head into town to take on Ramon and his cronies. Also, one thing neither one of you guys had mentioned that really stood out to me, and again, I think it's a lot to do with the time when this book was created, published, as opposed to, let's say, Tales of the Witchblade 1, where we discussed that as soon as Anna, the pirate, Anna Bonny, or whatever her name was, she got the Witchblade on that island she found it on, and the Witchblade immediately tore off all her clothes and she was wearing next to nothing. Whereas here, we see that Kono was in the bath. She jumps out of the bath. By the time she lands on the floor, she's armored up in the Witchblade, but it covers her almost completely. So I very much appreciate that. You know, there's not the gratuitous, let's try to make her look, you know, all sexy and, you know, whatever. So I thought that was something I noticed, something that for me is clearly more realistic. The Witchblade is, you know, a weapon, both offensive and defensive. Why would it make this little tiny armor that we've seen before? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really protect you very well. It seems much more likely that it would be something like this, where she's, you know, armored up and she's protected nearly from head to toe. I also noticed that when she lashed out at Amos, I mean, we don't see the end of the Witchblade as it punches him, but every other time we've seen the Witchblade, I mean, it's a blade, right? Like, we've seen it make a sword or, you know, knives or the tendrils that, you know, snake out and spike people and impale them. But he doesn't seem to really be hurt, so I don't know if she put, like, a blunt end on it purposefully. You know, again, she seems to be very well-versed, and I wonder how much of that is her Indian heritage, you know, whether she learned... Maybe her dad was a shaman or her grandfather or something like that. So she seems very comfortable with it and very much in control. And, you know, when she threatens Amos, she has just one little spike on the Witchblade that seems to be enough to threaten him. So she's an interesting character. She certainly seems to want to put on this air of being super tough and, you know, acting like she doesn't really care that the townspeople, you know, threw her out, but I think deep down it does really bother her. You know, she calls them a bunch of jerks and just kind of rides out of town and whatever, but I think she really is hurt. She really did care for them. So, yeah, all in all, a really good story. As Manny said, you know, a lot of the details in the garments and time-appropriate wardrobe is really cool. Just little things like on page 12, where one of Ramon's cronies is spinning his pistol, just adds a, you know, a feel of realism. So yeah, one of the better stories. Much like you said, Manny, I definitely would want to learn more and read more about this bearer of the Witchblade. Maybe more so than any of the tales of the Witchblade.
Yeah. I'd agree.
Bears.
This is one where I would actually want to know her past. Maybe even a little bit before, you know, she got the Witchblade. You know, how did she get the demeanor that to be so confident, and how the heck did she become sheriff? Because, yeah.
Yeah, that panel where she's turned the Witchblade into a gun is just so cool. It's just was not at all what I was expecting. Ramon is sitting in this chair. He's drinking from a fifth of whiskey or something, and the bottle's broken by a bullet. And you look at the next page, and she's got that guy. I mean, you knew it was her that shot at the bottle, you know, and I'm expecting to go to the next page, and she's going to be holding a gun. And for her to be just kind of, you know, with her hand, almost like you would do when you were a kid and played Cowboys and Indians, and you know, your hand was a gun. Well, her hand really is a gun. It's just so cool. And then even on the couple pages later, when it's more of a close-up, it just looks so cool.
His facial expression right there on that same page, it looks, it's really good too.
This here?
Yeah, it's done really well.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that she decided to separate him from his posse, though. I'm not exactly sure what the purpose of that was. You know, she says that she's seen their true faces, a hatred that sees in the hearts and evil lurks just below the surface. I think that she's not only talking about the three guys from his posse, from Ramon's posse, but also the other town folks. So maybe she feels that they're all bad. They're going to lump them all together.
Yeah, so they belong together.
And rides off to further adventures that maybe we'll get to read about someday. So, anything else you want to add, Jaden?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. Don't forget that you can like us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. And of course, we have our Twitter account, twitter.com/thecomicsource. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, click on the Contact Us page, contact us directly there. While you're there at our website, you can check out the Top Cow Chronology Project page, convention page, sketch gallery, Manny's blog, my YouTube channel. Lots to do on our website. We love to get feedback, so stay in touch. And on the next podcast episode, we'll be covering The Darkness, Shadows, and Flame, #1. So make sure you join us. Don't want to miss an episode. We'll talk to you then.